Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are going to be covering The Crown, Season 6, Episode 5, Will's Mania, and Season 6, Episode 6, Bruritannia.
Yes, we are. And there may be surprises, because I don't think I hated these episodes as much as I expected to.
I certainly didn't hate one of them. Yeah, I can't say I loved the other one.
But we will talk about them, and we are excited that you're joining us. We have our usual disclaimers, which include that there will be spoilers, there's going to be cursing, and we're having things to drink. What are you having to drink?
I'm having berry blush tea because of William and Diana's famous blush. And also it has rose hip in it, which is mentioned in the second episode by Elizabeth.
That's true. I am having champagne in a teacup because of something that comes up in the first episode. Now, I will say that
I was so proud of like mine being really tied to the episode, and not that yours isn't, but then you're just like, I'm just having, I had been looking at you drinking from this teacup and I was just like, gosh, he's having tea too.
No, I am not. I'm having champagne in a teacup, and I will explain it when we discuss the first episode. But I'd had a couple of other thoughts about what I was going to have to drink, and I nearly made myself a kamikaze, which is apparently William's favorite drink. And I may do that for,
you know, what's in a kamikaze?
It is lime juice, curacao, and vodka. Equal parts. Okay. So normally it's done as a shot. Your brother did a number of them at David and Katie's wedding, and it was
messy. I forgot
about
that. That's so funny.
So
I
don't know, but
some of us were recording wasted. Two episodes today.
Yeah, wasted is definitely the right answer.
Oh my god. Fun wedding though.
Totally awesome. David and Katie, you rock.
We love you.
We do love you. And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, David and Katie were our guests for Harry Potter Goblet of Fire. That episode, there was a lot of drinking in that episode too.
So much drinking.
It was super fun. And we would love to have them on again sometime.
And I
will say, when we were ranking shows we've done, we didn't include Harry Potter because those were movies.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
But it is its own separate category, so I guess that's okay.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, because I've skipped over that, because after Bridgerton was when we did Harry Potter. Did we do Ted Lasso first? It doesn't matter.
We did Harry Potter first.
That's what I thought. Okay, anyway. Here we go for Season 6, Episode 5, Will's Mania. If you could not tell already, this was my favorite of the two episodes.
Because
I wonder why.
Because William. Jeez. Mania. Will's Mania.
I wonder why. Anyway, William is listening to his music and goes about his day, his morning at least. There's an awkward, it's awkward at breakfast with his father and Harry. I think he's grown up. I don't remember. I was
a
trying to remember.
Actor.
Different actor, yes, because he grew up since then. So there is an awkward car ride with Charles, and they listen to Torn as they arrive back at Eden. Very symbolic.
Yes.
And I just find it so funny that like Charles was switching from like classical music to like Torn, and then was just like, oh, I love this song, and William's just looking at him like, what?
Well, and just the switch over, it's like, you're clearly pandering to me, and oh my god.
You just wanted me to listen to a sad song, dad. Charles is worried William is moving too quickly by going back to Eton so soon, but William says he'll be fine. Then Charles and Anne talk on the phone. Anne says Charles didn't have friends at school. And like, okay, so she's talking about like all the things he hasn't eaten. And because like Charles seems to think that William couldn't get away from him quick enough, and he feels like that's why he's running away. But she's just like, well, does he have like a support system there? Does he have friends? And then he's like, yes, what a question. And she's like, well, you didn't have friends.
I love Anne so much. She's funny. Anne is just the best.
Yeah,
I am with Philip on this one. Anne's the best of them, and I think part of that is because we've glossed over the fact that she cheated on her husband and some other shit. But still,
we've glossed anyway. then William goes in, and we we meet his house master, who is in the Gilded Age, I believe.
Yes.
Yes. Gay guy from the Gilded Age.
Yeah. So when you see him, you're like, okay, is he? But he's not, because he says he's married later on in the episode. So.
Oh, in this. Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think we just were letting that kind of like come in from the Gilded Age. Either way, yeah. William has gotten tons of condolence letters from his classmates and from all around the world, mostly from young ladies. I wonder why. Mm-hmm. Some of them are very like, why are you writing to this man like this after his mother's just died of like, I'm so sorry. Like there are some that are just like, my mother died from cancer recently. This is how I dealt with it. And then there are others that are just like, oh, you're so hot. I could be your shoulder to cry on. It's like, oh my God.
I will say that there are two bags of, or two sets of mail that he goes through. One is, of course, his peers. And like the classmates, it's like, oh, we can't wait till you're back on the team. You know, those kinds of things, which are really very nice. And he's clearly encouraged by that because it's personal. But mm-hmm. these other ones, it's like,
creepy. He reads through them, and then when he's going to bed, he looks over at his bedside or dresser or something with covered in like photographs, and one of them is of Claire Foy.
I know. I love that. I do want to point out that like these bags of mail, Diana had gotten bags of mail, as you'll recall, when she was alone, like waiting to
in season four.
Waiting to marry Charles, and she found it encouraging that people were reaching out to her. Yeah. William is not Diana. He's not.
And that's well depicted in this. And I would also like to say that it, as awesome as it is to see Claire Foy again, I'm confused that like I would never have like a young picture of my grandparents on my mantle. That's just me. But either way, look, grandma, you were young and hot then. Like, that's weird. Anyway.
Or we'd like to remember, whatever.
We prefer this person rather than you, old bat. Anyway. sorry, that is not a dig at Imelda Staunton. She's fantastic. Or Olivia Colman. Either way.
Again, our issues with these proceeding the later the seasons is the writing. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, and the directing in some cases. Anyway, the housemaster from the Gilded Age asks how William is doing, and he says fine. He's kind of just deflecting. And at this point, I don't blame him. I think even if you have somebody who you think that you can talk to about this stuff, you kind of want to just bury it down deep. I think I'm very similar to the character of William in that way, where it's just like, if I'm grieving, I kind of just push it down. I'm just like, I'm going to distract myself. I'm going to do literally anything else but do this. I mean, I can't say that's true recently because of the loss of our cat. I actually like kind of looked at old pictures immediately, just to kind of like let it out a little bit, and I'm just like, okay, I'm okay, it's okay. And so
it's a little different.
It's very different. Like if you died, that would be completely different.
Good, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, but I think I would take that kind of thing of like, okay, yeah, I'm just going to completely just divert myself away from that. And so it's really hard for him though, because everyone's asking about it, everybody's looking at him differently. I mean, I'm sure it would be the same for anybody who recently had lost a parent and had to go back to school and all that stuff, but it's so different because his mother was like this huge public figure. He's a huge public figure in himself.
Yeah.
But like she was such a big deal that like, and obviously her death was such a big deal that you can't avoid it. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. Anyway, since it's Elizabeth and Philip's golden anniversary, William is requested to go to the events, and he's like, all right, sure.
The housemaster even says, okay, you know, I've asked for you to be able to beg off, and William's like, no, doing it. And mm-hmm. so he shows up like there's some
before that, really quick, I had already mentioned that he's pushing himself hard and the guy tells him that he should kind of, it could help to slow down to process what's happening, but he's like, no. But he also watches a moth for some reason. I'm just like, okay.
I'm going to say this. I have been in those situations where you feel like someone's lecturing you about something that you don't want to talk about.
No, that wasn't my problem. It was the moth.
Just that there's a moth there? Is that,
yeah, like... I was confused on why there was such a fucking big moth there. Like,
okay,
is it supposed to be symbolic of, like, oh, it's Diana, it's the moth. Like,
what does that mean? I felt like it was, like, this moth-eaten whatever school. Anyway, I don't know. Whatever, don't care. Moving on, they go to this photography session with the family, and we don't we don't really get to see it, so, right. But there's clearly no Cecil, because I think Cecil's dead.
Disappointing. Don't say that.
And there's no whatever his name is by the stream either. But in any case, they have this photography session. William is doing what royals do, like staring out a window because he's going to wear the crown someday. You got to stare out the window. So he's staring out the window.
He's practicing.
Harry comes in.
He's older. And,
pardon me?
He's older too. Sorry.
Right. So it's another actor again for Harry. And so Harry comes in. Yes, he is. Harry comes in and they're chatting about stuff. And Harry gives him a cup of tea. And he's like, oh, I don't really want tea. This is William's like, I don't really want tea. And he's like, it's champagne in a teacup. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah,
I'll take it.
More like to deal with our family. For sure. I have felt this myself. So well done, Harry.
Next time I see you at like a family event, I'll grab a teacup, put some champagne in it, and be like, here's some tea, Mom. Wink.
Yeah, we don't have to hide it though with me.
No, anyway, we don't have to hide it at all.
Right. So they go, the boys down the liquor, and when Charles is coming in the room, and they're like, oh shit. So they just like kind of like,
well, before that, they're talking about how different everyone's acting. Everyone's like so much nicer, and William finds it very weird. Harry, I think he finds it weird, but at the same time, he's kind of relishing it a little bit more than William is. But
well, what he says is, I can't wait till they go back to normal and just kind of leave us alone. Like, William says go back to being ignored. So everyone's being so kind. But they later have to go out and work the crowd, as royals do. And when they go out to work the crowd, clearly the crowd wants to see William. And you know, some of it, of course, is the resemblance, right? You
know, I can't say I blame them.
No. He's very attractive, number one. Number two, he looks like Diana. He's not just attractive. He looks like Diana. And I think there's a lot of identification with him. And a lot of pressure because of that. So they're like they're screaming for William, and Charles is kind of looking at her like, hey.
It's Sydney all over again.
It is. It's Sydney all over again.
Sydney, Australia, to be precise, not a random woman named Sydney.
or a random man named Sydney.
So true.
Yeah. So no, it's not that. So what we're talking about is obviously the Diana and Charles towards Sydney that we'd seen in previous seasons. But also you see Queen Elizabeth's a little bit shocked by it too. Like, damn, you know, there's a lot of pressure on him. And Philip notices, you see them kind of looking around like, So Charles then, God, this is like hilarious. So Camilla and Charles talk about all of, you know, the events of the day afterwards, and you know, Charles is talking about how our family doesn't do fathers and sons well, and my dad sucked, basically. And then Charles and Camilla's like, you need to get off your ass and do something, which that advice I agree with, but of course this is a fictionalized conversation, so who the fuck knows if it happened. Charles visits William. He's responding in monosyllables, as they do, and then Camilla and Charles talk again, and Camilla tells Charles, again, the advice she's giving, I like. Again, I think they're trying to personalize her in a way and make us not hate her.
I think another portion of this that's important is in the first phone call with Camilla, Charles is like, yeah, no, we just don't do father and sons well in this family. I didn't have a good example with my father. And, of course, he's referring to Philip. And, I mean, yeah. Did you say that? Oh, well, was I not listening? How is that possible? I was listening. Anyway, maybe I wasn't actively listening. as opposed to passively listening. But
Whatever.
I think I was thinking about that fucking moth again. Like, I don't know why
It was a big
that
distraction for
bothers
you.
me.
We need to talk about this.
I'm sorry. I'm just
It's
confused. Anyway, yeah, sorry.
okay.
William also got a lot of letters on Valentine's Day, and his housemaster was like, I'll get rid of them. And he's like, yes, please do, because these people are insane.
Yeah,
And
exactly. And he's right. But Camilla tells Charles that being a father is his most important job. And they talk a little bit about being in a Charles is like whining for Camilla. Oh, when can we get back together? This is terrible. We're in the prison of public opinion. And she actually says, oh yeah, boo-hoo for me. And it's like, yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
and
That's the right thing to say. But then they leave her like crying at the kitchen table kind of thing. Fine.
yeah, there also Charles tells William it might be a good idea to visit Diana's grave and place some flowers, and that's just kind of like brushed aside. But he also wants to combine a trip to Canada over Easter and have a ski trip with him and the boys. Yeah, then Charles complains about his behavior to Camilla, all that stuff. He calls her gallant for suffering through all this. What the fuck is she? She's not suffering. This is her
Not.
fucking dream come true. Like,
Yes.
what?
No,
Shut
she's
up.
not suffering. This is
Yeah, but I
bullshit.
did appreciate the boohoo poor me. And then, of course, he had to be like, oh, this is agony not seeing you. Blah, 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 blah. I can't. I can't with it. On the
I
plane to
absolutely
Canada.
love this next
I
scene with
know,
the
Mom.
stupid
Can I
though.
say it?
Yes, you can.
On the plane to Canada, Harry starts throwing paper or nuts or something at Will. Not those nuts, but other nuts.
Popcorn
And
something.
when he naturally looks out the window, and Harry throws paper at the private secretary talking to Charles on the other side of the plane as well. Harry's then aiming to throw paper at Charles again, but actually throws it at William without looking, and they just start laughing. It's very
Yeah,
funny.
it's
I
so
love
cute.
it.
It's such a sibling dynamic that
Oh,
again you
yeah.
love to see that because it's real. And all I could think was boys. They arrive in Vancouver and they are taking the hotel and they get there and there's this enormous crowd and they're all screaming for William. And they're like just nuts for him. They've got all these pictures like marry me kind of thing. And
Yeah.
Harry is so cute afterwards. Like he's like, oh yeah, they're all screaming for you because no one screams for someone with red hair.
He also says, oh, marry me, William. My babies. It's just
Yeah,
so funny.
exactly. It is. And again, it's so sibling.
And of course,
They.
like William literally says, fuck off. It's just,
Yeah,
I like that they're cursing like normal people.
I like that. William's not excited about these screaming girls, and they go to a space center, but and then they're gonna go to Whistler to ski, but there's gonna be first a photo call with journalists, and William's like, no, I hate these people, and I hate the press, I hate the crowds, whatever. And then he says, and I love this, he says it to Charles, I'm not the one with an image problem.
So true.
And Charles gets all hurt and walks away.
Yeah, and then Harry's like, that was a bit harsh. And then he's just like, you thought it too. Anyway,
Facts.
they do the photo
We
call
all
anyway. Charles tells Elizabeth and Philip about William hating the press and the public. Charles says he needs to let it all out and asks Elizabeth to talk to him, but she says it's his right as a parent to do it. Then there's a photo of Matt Smith while this Philip looks at like reels of Philip past, but past Philip. So no
Matt Smith, Philip.
Tabatabentes, just Matt Smith on the beach in Monaco. I forget where they are. It doesn't matter.
Gibraltar.
Yeah, Gibraltar. Was it Gibraltar? I don't recall that, but okay. But they're I thought it was Malta.
Yeah. Malta. You said Monaco, which is not the same
I
thing.
know, which is wrong, but I was closer. Anyway,
Not geographically, but
not
okay.
geographically, but letter-wise, I was closer. Anyway, yeah, he looks at old reels of Clairefoy and Matt Smith with the children. He looks at old letters between him and Charles. Well, I guess he was at the school.
Yeah, the school from hell.
Gordonston.
Yes.
And then we briefly see Matt Smith shirtless on the beach.
Yay!
The housemaster tells William he has been invited to tea with Elizabeth and Philip. And William arrives and Charles is there instead to deal with it on their own. Charles says William is angry with him for all of the press. William looks out of the window again. William says they never talk about Diana and he blames her for how they got to this point. Blames him, sorry, for how they got to this point. He blames him for not being, for her not being safe with them and making her unhappy by loving someone else. Charles says the accident wasn't his fault. William says Charles resents him. He says something about, like, you resent me. And then he's just like, no, I've only been proud of your popularity and your accomplishments and all that. And he says, since when have you taken pleasure in anyone else's popularity? Yep. And I'm like, accurate. Yep. William thinks Charles thinks, sorry, that was hard. But William thinks that Charles thinks he's just like Diana and he hates him for it. He thinks Charles hates him for being like Diana. And Charles is like, no, you're nothing like Diana. And then Charles apologizes for not rising to the occasion because of his grief. And he's just like, your grief? What the fuck?
Yeah.
And I think that it's valid because I don't think anyone's thinking about Charles's grief. And I do think it's obviously present. And I think even the real Charles must have grieved for Diana in some respect, regardless of how things ended up. He must have at least had a little bit, like a modicum of respect for her at some point, and lived with her, had children with her. Of course they have, he would feel something. And
I think that the way we process this in the show is through this next Philip section, which I'd like to do if you don't mind.
Yeah, you can do that after I'm done. Charles apologizes. Yeah, he apologizes for not rising the occasion. William resents Camilla and calls her the other one, which I love.
Amen, brother.
Well, they were also doing that to Dodie. So it's not just when his father moves on, which he had already done within the marriage, but like it was also when Diana was trying to like move on in a certain way, but she in the show at least she wasn't doing it in any serious way. He hates that she was in the south of France just so that she didn't have to be there for the birthday of the other one, and he says that she still loves Charles and that's why it hurt to see that. And I think that in many ways that is true. I don't think I think at some point she did love Charles enough to be like, and he must have had some kind of love for her as well, but like it's still, it makes it hurt more to think about it that way.
But of course, William would know, right?
I mean, yeah, absolutely, because he was actually very like caught in the middle.
Right, exactly. So,
yeah, go ahead and do the Philip part.
What happens next is that Philip is in William's room. So William is at chapel. He goes to his room, and Philip is in his room. He's like, oh, sorry.
Like Batman.
Yeah, he is. Like, although it doesn't really like come out that way. Looking at William's got girl posters up, Claudia Schiffer, Cindy Crawford, Naomi Campbell. And he's like, oh, in my day, we had Rita Hayworth and whatever. They play chess, and Philip is criticizing William's playing. He's like, you're playing like a deranged Viking. Don't play chess with your emotions. And William's like, And then he's like, you know what? I know who you are the most angry with, but first I want to talk to you about my back pain. And William's like, what? And he's like, you know, when I have unresolved anger or resentment, I often call it something else, back pain, neck pain, whatever, rather than what it actually is. And they talk about how he is suddenly a public figure, William is, and suddenly public property. That he's not remotely like Diana, but he is angry with Diana too. Part of that anger is that he doesn't have her comfort, William doesn't, with crowds, and is leaving me to deal with this transition to being a public person without any guidance because Charles sucks. So, I mean, really, you know, he doesn't say it's because Charles sucks, but he says, but we know, Charles is grieving too, and he does miss her, but you are grieving. I mean, you can't deal with it. You can't deal with your anger with her because she's the person you're grieving, basically. Like, you don't want to, you can't say I'm mad at my mom for, you know, abandoning me kind of thing.
For dying
when like she's the person that you're grieving for. So they they saw see that, you know, Charles and the others have all kind of what's the word I have here? Blend. It's probably a great word that I can't read in my notes. have like kind of done something with themselves, and they have all like been able to deal with that. And he, you know, he admits, Philip does, that he has never been like good at being a parent either. But, you know, I see that with Charles. He's trying, but he doesn't know how to do it. But you're taking it out on Charles, and it's not fair. I do make the note here that, you know, finally Philip has more dimensions than he's had before.
Definitely. Really quickly, also, he also says, remember this feeling whenever you're begging the forgiveness of your son.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it feels awful.
Should have done. Right. And I should have done this more with my own son. I did it a couple of times, but I should have done it more.
Not enough.
True. And I think that's always true. But he takes William to Highgrove, and you can see, although we don't get to hear the conversation, you see William go up and talk to his father, and they hug. And Philip is tearing up, and I've got to say, this is the best.
So good.
You know, and of course, then we also see like retrospective Matt Smith, yay, and I'm crying. and then we see William boating out to where Diana's grave is. And I noted this too. So where they put Diana's grave is on the Spencer property. It's on an island in the middle of a lake. Mm-hmm. And it's good because it's really very private. Like, people can't just come on the property. And you can imagine how swarmed it would be if it was someplace public. Like, you know, if it were, you know, Westminster Abbey, you'd never get people out of there. They'd be there all the freaking time.
It was a smart idea.
It was a very smart idea. And William is able to go, and he boats over, and he's by himself with her, and is really, he's making amends with her memory. And it's lovely. Yep. So what were your best parts?
I have quite a few. William in general is fantastic. The actor's great.
Yeah.
He also looks a lot like him, which is creepy. Philip's talk is fantastic. I love every bit of it. Like, it's regardless of if it's anachronistic, not anachronistic, but like, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Not exploitation. What's the other one? The one that we talk about a lot with this show. Not what happened in real life. That's what I meant.
Oh, yeah. No, it's fiction.
Well, not fiction. It was the other one. Extrapolation. That's the one. Regardless of if it's extrapolation, I really like this talk with Philip and him admitting his own faults for once. Yeah. Because we have not seen much of that in this iteration of Philip, which is disappointing, because I think the actor does it, Jonathan Pryce does it so well.
We've seen stupid trotting things with stupid horses. It's been annoying.
Don't even start. William and Harry, I love their dynamic. It's fantastic. Well written. They're brothers. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. And regardless of the relationship now, at some point you just act like brothers. And that's just kind of how things are. Charles for trying a little bit. I appreciated at least that he was recognizing his son was still hurting, and he tried to reach out, even though he like complained about it afterwards to Camilla. I think that at least he tried a little bit. Photos of and reels of Claire Foy and Matt Smith. Always love seeing them, especially when he's a little bit shirtless on a beach. Airing out the hatred of Charles. I really liked that. I liked William and Charles's fight of talking about how, like, we talked about it last episode, of how like his parents blame him for divorcing Diana and all that stuff, but the kids also blame him too in many ways. And I'm glad that we finally got to see a little bit of that perspective. We only saw it from William's perspective, but then again, it was his episode, but like, it's not like Harry gets an episode to himself, but whatever. I'm sure Harry had similar sentiments in some way, but he was younger.
He's not in line for the crown, so he doesn't get
it. He doesn't get it. And then the ending is really sweet with the hug. I loved that. And then him going to the grave is very sweet. And then Anne for saying that Charles had
oh,
no
I
friends.
Forgot Anne. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, all I right. forgot her too until we discussed it, and then I added her to the list.
Yeah, no, I do love Anne. So this is a Philip and Anne episode in many respects.
Because they, oh my God, so true.
And of course, I do love Philip in this. I love that they finally brought him back as an actual human instead of like just the naysayer and the hardliner and the bad guy. You know, it's like I got very tired of that. And I feel like that does not do service to the character that we came to love with Matt Smith. So Philip slash Matt Smith, love it. Harry,
I thought you said has Matt Smith.
No, Harry, I love in this. I think he's great. William, of course, is like all of the episode, and that really is a brilliant performance, really well done.
He's fantastic.
Charles is a question mark, both positive and negative for me.
I agree.
And I feel a little unfair not acknowledging the words that come from Camilla's mouth, because I think the words are good. Yeah, but
the words are good, but the sentiment.
Right. I don't believe that they actually happened is my problem. And while all of these other conversations are also extrapolation, they seem plausible. Those did not. And that's a bit unfair because she's the parent of children as well. So one would imagine she does have some idea of what parenting is. But if your biggest role is being a parent, why did you fuck up everyone's marriage?
That's exactly what I was thinking while she was saying that. I was like, well, you're a parent. You fucked that up, didn't you? Like,
yeah. So my worst parts are very simple. I have Charles question mark and Camilla question mark, and that's it. What were your worst parts?
I have Charles question mark. Looking out the window constantly and calling Camilla gallant.
God, that is so far beyond the pale of not okay. I'm just ignoring it because it. Ugh. Anyway, what grade did you give?
I gave it an A-. I think this is a fantastic episode. I really enjoyed it. I think that it comes off the coattails of an okay episode that handled some of the stuff well and made it just better because it was focusing on a perspective I actually cared about. Obviously, we were focusing on the public and like Charles and all of that stuff after Camilla's death. Sorry, Diana's death. The first
wishful thinking.
Whoa! No, I don't want anyone to die. Anyway, after Diana's death and. We were seeing it from a broader perspective, and I think that we should have, with the Force Ghost thing, it should have also happened to William, but we kind of get the Force Ghost in this, where it's just like we're finally seeing inside of William's head of how he feels about his mother being dead and how he's dealing with it and how he's growing as a public figure and how he handles that compared to how other people in the royal family did that. And also we get to see like his relationships with his brother, who is now more grown up. And we just get a lot more out of this episode than I think we have in the past like four of things that I actually care about, and including the characters that we've had that were kind of focused on before, like Philip and Charles, where we're getting a different perspective of them actually trying after this. And it's really nice to see. I like it. So again, I'm biased because this was an era of the royal family I watched a little bit more closely and also was alive for. So I remember like waking up to watch William and Kate's wedding. Like I'm always going to mention that, but that's the story that I know better. And if I were alive in the 80s, I'm sure I would have like seen a lot of stuff about Diana and Charles. I just didn't connect with it.
It was so overwhelming. And of course, you know, I'm not gonna retread that. But I'm sorry. Did you have more to say?
Well, I also just wanted to say I don't follow the royal family that closely. If I'm being honest, I follow like if a major death has happened, obviously with the Queen and Philip and all that stuff. It's very sad. But I don't really follow it that closely. And so I get to see a perspective of it that I didn't before. So, but it's at least with people I'm familiar with. Either way, go ahead.
I gave this, actually, I originally gave it a B. I bumped it to a B+ as we were talking. You know, you make a good argument. I do care, obviously, far more about William's take on this death than on really anyone else's. And I do like that they are addressing that on some level. I think I didn't give it higher than a B plus. Well, it probably is. It deserves probably an A minus. Because we do have some, fill up again. So okay, well, I'll give it an A minus. All right, so
We win.
yay! Season six, episode six, Ruritania.
Okay, Elizabeth has a nightmare about being overthrown by Tony Blair as king and the Labour Party. He's randomly now here. Great.
Oh, I love how they have him have the boys choir
Oh my
singing
God.
"Things Can Only Get Better." Are you fucking kidding me?
Weird.
It's ridiculous. I'm sorry. That again, showrunners, sometimes they go off the rails, and this is one
Yeah,
of that
I
early part is a little goofy.
wrote. Yeah, I also wrote down. Oh wait, this show's about Elizabeth. Elizabeth tells her private secretary about her concern for the prime minister being more popular than her and wants to know where they went wrong. They get a focus group. They get focus groups in major cities. They found that people think that they're out of touch, badly advised, wasteful of public money, and lack compassion. And many other things. Elizabeth is worried about Blair's popularity still, and Blair gives a speech about war in Serbia,
Yugoslavia, yeah.
Yugoslavia.
It used to
Sorry,
be Yugoslavia.
I wasn't alive for this one, so I don't
I
know.
was alive for this one. So yeah, no, it was the former Yugoslavia, and Slobodan Milosevic was committing genocides and
Yeah, they
like
did everything in broad strokes in this one, so I'm just like, what is this? What? It's
yeah,
I can't
it
say
is.
it's a war I'm familiar with. So sorry to Yugoslavia, well, not to
Yeah,
Yugoslavia, but to
there
like
are
the
elements.
people who were involved,
Yeah, it was
who weren't
awful.
dictators. They have talked to the US about help, but President Clinton refused, saying it's not our problem. And in many ways, well, in some ways that is true, but either way. Still, there's a dictator and people want to stop him and NATO and blah, blah, blah. Elizabeth asks her private secretary about if she is a domestic or foreign policy queen because Blair is clearly one over the other. I forget which one he is. Is it
It's a foreign
foreign?
policy guy. So the
Yeah.
way the secretary describes him is he aspires to be a statesman, which, again, I think that's definitely true of Tony Blair. And he had a broader reach of popularity, including in the US, than he had than a lot of PMs have. So yes.
Yeah. Elizabeth has written a speech for the Women's Institute and gives it at their event. She talks about how vital they were during the war, including rosehip serum or syrup, which is inspired my choice for my drink today. She also it's a great and a very personal speech because it's a something she's actually passionate about. It's not like you're visiting a car factory. She's visiting an institution that she has been a part of forever.
Right,
And so she's very proud of
before she
it.
got married. I mean, she has been a part of that, the Women's Institute, and been involved in their charitable work and work during the war personally. So
Yeah,
yeah.
and she has this fun little joke of like, oh, it has about 250,000 members, which is bigger than this random city. I forget which one. And she says, imagine a women of a city run by the Women's Institute. It would the roads would be spotless and everything would run on time, and we would also take all the men's jobs. It's so
Yeah,
funny. I
and there's
love
a lot
that.
of cheering.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
but
they're as it should.
yeah, but Tony Blair is talking to his wife, and he is you're talking to his wife about how to approach Bill Clinton and get the funding that they need or the troops that they need, because it's become clear that the air strikes that they had done in Yugoslavia were not getting anywhere, and so she advises him to be. To basically tell them to be not isolationist anymore, and so appeal to their conscience, not to their interests, because what he's done up so far is like, oh, your monetary interests, your whatever. And so he goes to Chicago, he makes a speech. It's a really good speech,
Yeah.
and it has some great phrases in it, Britain, and he's like, look, if you get involved in this, Britain will always be your ally and all these other things. And Clinton and the press are all kind of like, yeah, Tony Blair's got it, man. And so they get the funding and the troops that they need. And so he pulled it off. And so he goes to visit Elizabeth, and she's like, oh, is it slippery when you walk on water? I mean, she's really like, he's on top of the world at this point. And she's like, look, I really respect the fact that you aren't just a popular PM, but you also have influence, and it's, you know, international influence. I would like to know what you would do if you were me, you know. And you know, he goes and he has committees, you know, basically talk about things that they would do to revise the aristocracy or revise the monarchy. And you get the sense that his wife is very, very anti-monarchy, very like, you get rid of them altogether. That would be the easy answer, blah, blah, blah. Blair like gets this big report. They pull together a big report. He's very diplomatic with Elizabeth, but he gives her a list of you know, things to change: primogeniture, transparency.
For those who don't know what primogeniture is and waited for his explanation, it is girls being in the line of succession, like primary in the way the line of succession used to work is that the boys would have
firstborn boy is the heir. Yes. And Elizabeth did change this with the birth of
Charlotte. Lily.
Children. Yeah. Actually, it was, I think, with
George,
that's
that, nice.
That if, and I'm sure they knew he was a boy already, but whatever.
That's for sure.
But it was before George was born, they decided that a firstborn girl would inherit as well.
I like that a lot.
Right. So they've got transparency, accountability, getting rid of these anti-Catholic provisions, the slightly, there are, you know, some technical issues, but she's kind of like, look, you know, we can get rid of the idea that a royal can't marry a Catholic, except that you then end up with the possibility of a Catholic monarch and you're supposed to be head of the Church of England. That's kind of a problem. He's like, you can work that out. And she's kind of like, no. And then he starts talking about basically downsizing the role of the monarchy to like Sweden or Netherlands. And you know, you've got all of these things like the royal falconer and you know, all these ancient prerogatives,
master of the swans,
right? And you know, you need to take a look at that because it's bloated, okay? And you know, like definitely need to like bring down the state opening in parliament because there are all these people,
heralds,
royal titles, and blah blah blah. And I'm gonna just say this. We just watched the transfer of power because Elizabeth, you know, for those of you who have not been paying attention, Elizabeth is now deceased. So we saw the state funeral and Charles has been crowned, and we saw the coronation. And I gotta tell you, these people do this shit really, really fucking well. And there's a reason they do it really well, because they have people on staff that maintain all of this stuff and make it something that the world wants to watch. Which is not true in Sweden. It's not true in the Netherlands. It's not true.
I don't give a shit about Sweden's royalty.
or Spain's or anywhere else. I mean, honestly, this is and it's not just a language and culture issue, although I'm sure that affects things. It is much more about the pomp and circumstance, right?
Yeah.
And you know, the fact that they make the effort to do that really kind of matters. Go ahead.
The Blairs talk about how getting rid of the mystery wouldn't help them, like the wife does, because look what happened with the Catholic Church. Like, they took away some of the mystery and all that stuff, and what happened there? Some people left and it sucked. And then Elizabeth meets with the roles like the Warden of the Swans, Herb Strewer, and the Yeoman of Glassware in China.
I love these people. Do you not love these people?
I'm not saying I don't love them. Yeah, they're amazing.
Like the Yeoman of Glassware in China or whatever his actual
iconic.
I mean, this guy has to monitor all of the glassware in China in every house.
He folds the napkins in a really cool like Dutch bonnet way. It's so cool.
I mean, like, I want you to think about how many different sets of china are involved here, different sets of glassware. I'm
talking them every day.
Well, and like
keeps you busy. Sure,
like if they don't break, you replace them, whatever. I mean, this is a big fucking deal. Now the swan thing maybe less, but then she starts talking to them about like what they actually do. And
yeah,
it's a lot more complicated than they want to make it out to be.
Yes, every person takes great pride in their work and care about their role. The royals discuss the changes. Master of the Swans or whatever, he shows her this old, like, 15th century, maybe, is it 15th century? I don't know, 16th, maybe. Either way, century book that they have kept in his family for generations. These are old techniques that they really care about what they do, and they pass it down from generation to generation. And it's clear so much care goes into everything that they do. And and one of the things that Blair was so upset about was that it was kept in one family and not based off of, like, just talent. But honestly, there's so much talent in one family because of the generational, like,
knowledge.
Trauma.
The institutional knowledge. Right. It's institutional knowledge. And I think that's something, it's gone from, because that was part of the bitching, is like, you have the Lord High, whatever, of the Swans, or the Wash, or fill in the blank. And what she points out when they meet again, and I'm skipping ahead, I know that, but what she points out is that, it's not just about, like, making sure there are swans to eat.
Yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Anyway, the royals discuss the changes the prime minister wants to make. Charles wants to make one or two concessions just to show that they're listening. Philip sees it as a warning. They're going to chop off your head, like Charles the First?
Charles the First, James the First. Yeah, there was some head chopping.
Yeah, and so the prime minister talks to Elizabeth about the change in power in the U.S. Now it's Bush.
And Charles the Second. Sorry, go ahead.
It might have been Charles the Second. I might have. That's why I was concerned.
I think it was one. Might have been both, honestly, but whatever.
Either one. And now we have Charles the Third. Anyway, Elizabeth talks about where to draw the line for change, because, like, at some point it just will stop looking like the monarchy. Like, what? Then what's the point? Elizabeth's private secretary goes to her, and he says it might be best for him to quit and get someone more willing to make at least some concessions within reason, because he's just a little too stuck in his ways, and he realizes that. He recognizes it. He's like, yeah, no, I realize that I can be a little too set in my ways and allow you to just get rid of any of these things. But there's somebody who I've been, like, training who might be a little bit better and a little bit younger and able to, like, see towards the future. Elizabeth's new private secretary tells Elizabeth that the prime minister is going to address the Women's Institute.
Oh, wait, no, you've skipped this whole thing.
Okay.
There's this whole discussion about they've reviewed everything, and these are not just... Like, she has a meeting with Blair about the whole Bush-Gore thing here in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, I mentioned that, but yeah, I didn't go into detail.
Right, so, Tony Blair is like, oh, I'm hot dude. I'm going to be, like, the person who can basically guide him. I'm the elder statesman in this group, so he's going to listen to me.
He's a Republican, but we can work with that. Like, okay.
And what she says is that we've reviewed everything that you wanted us to review, and we've just, we've concluded these are not just Ruritanian titles, basically, just antiquity, that kind of thing. But it's a vehicle for continuity from the just... having swans to eat to the conservation of swans and wetlands and whatever within England, so that they have an actual environment in which they can thrive and blah, blah, blah. And when you start thinking about it, it's like, these are all things that in a place like the US, you would have that as, like, a department within, your interior department, whatever.
Yeah. And within the government.
So, right. It's in the government. The fact that it's not in the government, it's not subject to the political whim, is something that it does have value, and she has a point with it. And I think that is something that kind of gets glossed over, because we go straight to the more flashy thing of the Women's Institute. So go ahead.
Blair gives a tone-deaf political speech, which the Women's Institute, like, their primary thing is not being political. It's more just, like, a general, we're going to help everybody kind of thing. and we're especially going to help uplift women and that kind of stuff. So it's not political at all. And so
and you have starts, a guy
and he's this guy mansplaining politics to these women about, like, it's trying to be like suave about it too, just being like, yeah, no, we try to keep tradition, but sometimes it's a good thing not to do that. And they're just like, that's our whole foundation, like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then he starts talking about change can be some good, like the changes I'm making as prime minister is good, or good.
He uses the term radical. He's like, yeah, oh,
hey, radical is not a word we should shy away from. It's like, okay, for these traditional women, no. And the women start clapping at him to shut him up.
And they start walking out. It's hilarious.
And then the prime minister has a meeting with Elizabeth talking about her being like unapologetically royal. And just being a badass bitch.
and she's like, there's no such thing as being too royal. I do it properly and unapologetically, and that's pretty much it. So what were your best parts?
Elizabeth at the Women's Institute. I love that speech. It's very personal. It's very uplifting. I really enjoyed it. Learning about the roles in the monarchy. Love that. That was fun. Like, because all of these people take such great pride in their work. And especially if you could say, I work for the queen. I work for the monarchy. And I work in this very specific niche thing, but I'm very good at it. And it's something that's been passed down for generations. It's really cool. I love doing it. I mean, if they weren't passionate about what they did, sure, yeah, fire them or whatever. But, like, they're really passionate and they're very good at it. So just let them do it. And it clearly is helping in many ways that are, go unseen by the public and the government even. But, like, it's very important work. And I love that Elizabeth appreciates that. I love that she also knows some of these people's names off the top of her head, like, the guy he mentioned, oh yeah, the herb person or somebody,
herb strewer,
or it was face. The born master of the swans. She knew off the top of her head. Oh dear Terry, yes, of course. Yeah. It's like, it's impressive. Like, first of all, she meets so many fucking people, but like, she just knows these people by name, which is so impressive to me, and I love that. It gave Elizabeth a great.
She knows what her job. She knows her job.
Yes. She also, they make some good points about like the primogeniture and all that stuff. I like that they bring that up. Obviously, they could make some concessions about like tightening up the purse strings or something like that, but that's always been an issue. And so it being brought up is not like radical. also the private secretary quitting. I liked the private secretary a lot, and I liked that he was self-aware enough to be like, I'm not helping you, and I'm not going to be able to yield to these people's demands in a way that they would be okay with. And so I'm going to give you somebody who can and also maintain a good balance. So yeah. I liked that.
Well, and right. So my best parts were Elizabeth finally, like, we're having an episode that's actually about Elizabeth. Where's the crown? Yay.
Exactly.
And the secretary. And I want to point out, because when you were talking, it kind of made me realize, okay, we are on the downslope of the last season of The Crown, and we're finally, for the first time, hearing about these people who work in these royal positions, like, that are, you know, have spent their whole lives being the herb strewer. You know, it's like, and so I like that they're at least acknowledging it, but you had like all this time that you could have spent, you know, a little bit of time shining a light on some of that, and instead you were spending it on Diana and Dodi, and that really kind of makes me angry on some level. But those were my best parts. What were your worst parts?
My worst parts were the same plot every season about the royals being out of touch. Sorry. sorry for yelling. Wanting to take away the mystery. The mystery is the cool part, y'all. Like, when are you going to figure that out? Like, I understand that some of the pomp and circumstance seems a bit frivolous and a bit too much, and it, obviously if it's coming at the expense of like taxpayer dollars that aren't being used in a efficient or effective way, sure, you can have your gripes about that, absolutely, that's fine. But for them to just be like, we want to take away everything about the mystery. It's kind of like, what the fuck are you trying to do? Like, that's the cool part. Like, otherwise there's just like the government. It's just like everything else. Like, there's just, it's just annoying. And Blair's tone deaf political speech, like mansplaining things to women. Like, I was like,
oh, I thought that was hilarious.
That was so funny, but also, what the fuck is wrong with you? Even he said afterwards that his advisors advised him not to. And I'm like, and yet you did it. Like, what? Yeah.
I can personify pretty much everything that you put as a negative in my one negative, which is Blair's wife. Because she doesn't want any of that. She is probably more radical than he is. And so I felt like she was kind of the, and at least as portrayed in this show, she is kind of the impetus behind a lot of his crap. I'm sure she probably felt like he wasn't going far enough in the, oh, you need to advise them to cut back on more shit. You know, they need to just step down altogether. Because you do hear her saying things kind of like that. And you're kind of like, no, it's not okay. So what grade did you give this episode?
Either a B or a B+. I think it's a B+, honestly. I enjoyed it. I think that we needed a good Elizabeth episode. We haven't had one in a long time. Obviously it's this in a similar vein as many of the other episodes we've had in the past about like, oh, the royals are out of touch, we need things to change, and then they're just like, no, and then you just end. But either way, I liked this one better because it got a lot more personal, and so it you got to learn a little bit more, and it wasn't just, oh, well, we have money and we use it in this way. It's just like, oh no, but these people have an actual craft that they're very proud of and they do very well. We need to let them continue to do that for the sake of everybody, but also for them. So yeah.
Well, and I gave this a B. Well, so I had it as a B+, and then because I was bumping the Will's Mania up, I was kind of trying to maneuver. I'm back to a B+ for this. Anyway, so but I feel like I have missed in this show that tension between actual Elizabeth, where's the crown, and, you know,
regular Elizabeth.
Well, right. And, you know, just a little bit of the stuff with the PM that isn't like all Margaret Thatcher, Margaret Thatcher, Margaret Thatcher. So I kind of liked this episode. You know, we did have a little bit of John Major back in the day, and I liked some of that too. Like, I have missed an Elizabeth episode, so I really like this. So yeah, we don't have much more of the crown to do we?
No,
but we are going to be taking a little diversion in our next episode. So for those of you who are still feeling the Bridgerton drought, we read the Smythe Smith books, and we're going to be doing,
well, I reread them actually.
Okay, so you know more than I do, fine. But I really they are the last group of books that I read, other than my book club books, which are completely different. And so we are going to be covering the Smythe Smith Quartet. And I think if you're a Bridgerton person, these episodes are really, really very fun for us. And we hope that you join us. And
cheers.
Cheers.